Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with gold and jewels, and a red dragon. He starts to breathe. Save or die!
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classic Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 14. It is I, Vince, along with Glenn.
Hey.
Part of the Core 2 back this week for another adventure, but we do have some familiar voices coming back again to sit in. Julie, as usual, people love the Julie voice. Yes, we got a couple thumbs up on the love of Julie's voice in the forums, as I noticed.
Oh, good.
And she'll be joining us. And back by popular hated demand, Crispy.
Hey guys, what's going on in this podcast?
So is this like the B team?
Sure, yeah. This is like the second string in football sort of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I like the B team. I keep thinking they're wearing B outfits.
Ay, ay, ay! Ay, caramba! Like the B on The Simpsons.
I don't know. I'm going old school. I'm thinking, which one of us is John Belushi and which one's Elliot Gould?
Killer Bees.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So now that everybody understands that butt crispy, let's move on. Let's head down to our cauldron room.
The ceremonial kick down the stairs for me.
Yeah, definitely. Let's kick Glenn down the stairs. And so what have you guys been doing? Anybody been doing anything classical? Let's start with our youngest member, Crispy.
Yeah, actually, over the last week, I've been going through and I reread Holmes. I'm working my way through Swords and Wizardry. And I also discovered a great little website, if no one has read it yet. It's philotomy.com. It's Philotomy's OD&D Musings. It's got a really great articles on there about a bunch of classic D&D stuff, mostly OD&D, but it's got a focus on Holmes as well. And he's got a really cool campaign journal for B4, The Lost City. So I've been reading that and really enjoying what I'm reading.
Cool.
Could you spell that?
It's Phil, philotomy.com.
Okay.
Perfect. And Julie, what have you been doing lately?
I haven't done anything, you know, classic D&D recently, except for, of course, I'm writing a audio drama series, but it's not specifically set in any world except my head. But it's gonna really has got the feel of that.
Really?
I just finished the fifth script for it.
Can you tell us anything about it, or it's still top secret right now?
Oh, it's a classic dungeon crawl. A group of people get dropped into a dungeon, very much a classic caves and monsters and things. It's going to be great.
Okay. Are you going to be doing the voices for it as usual?
Oh, as usual. I'm probably going to recruit you guys to play some of the monsters and stuff.
Booga booga, yeah. All
right, cool. It's going to be a hoot, but it's not going to start coming out till spring or something, but it's nice to know I'm getting ahead on it, so it'll be all ready when I do.
Did you write a character for me and one for Vince who slaps me down?
Well, there's the three trolls named...
Don't.
You don't want to know?
Oh, go ahead.
Ome, Erile, and Early K.
Oh, boy. Where's Shempe?
Well, it's not... It's one of those things where, you know, I just needed some names, so I slapped him in there.
Where's Shempe?
Oh, I think they already ate him.
Oh, okay.
Empshe. They probably ate him.
Darn.
I
haven't been doing much except reading some modules, and probably at this point we've played in a couple games, you know, classic D&D. I know Crispy ran a game recently. It was really awesome. Yeah, he ran the X1 module.
Yeah?
Right, Chris?
Yep. I actually just bought a second copy as well. So I was like, do I have this module? No, I don't have this module. I should get this module. It's cheap. And I went and got it, and now I have two. So I'm like, hey, you know, I think I want to run this.
What happened? What happened?
Which one's that? I only know them by the titles. I never keep track by the numbers.
That's the Isle of Dread. It's for the Mowgli Cook expert set.
He actually used the Holmes rules for it.
I love Holmes. Yeah. I love D6 damage.
And so Crispy, tell us a little bit about NeonCon that you went to.
Yeah.
I went to NeonCon a couple weeks ago. It's a gaming convention here in Vegas. I think it's one of a few, but it's the biggest. Really fun time. I got to demo a lot of really great games. Played a card game called Orbit by a bunch of guys from 42 Games is the company, and that's 42games.com if anyone wants to check it out. It's like Uno and Munchkin mixed.
Oh.
So you're like in this race around an orbit, and that's your track, and you're just really trying to screw everyone else over so you can win. And a lot of really great turnarounds. I got to play a couple D20-based fantasy games, which are really cool. Fantasy Craft from Fantasy Flight Games Crafty Games. And just met a lot of cool people. Got to see some neat games being played. No one had any classic D&D, though, which kind of sucked. And if I didn't have to work the day I went, I would have probably brought something and ran it for open gaming.
What kind of booty did you get?
I got a set of Paizo Game Mastery cards.
Oh, I thought you were talking about other booty.
I didn't get any other booty. Though my roommate did play Orbit with some pinup models while I was at work.
Ooh.
Yeah, the mint chocolate chippies, I believe are what they're called.
Now, does he have proof or did he just claim he did?
No, he has proof. There's pictures.
Oh, okay.
I seen it.
I mean, after you go to work, he could be doing anything.
I know. Yeah, I got a few new dice.
Dice?
Yeah, I got a new Paizo 20-sided die.
Ooh. Paizo. Yeah, I gotta love Paizo.
I do love them. And I also got something I think Vince would like. I bought a copy of Play Dirty by John Wick.
I would like that?
Yeah, it's all about being an evil DM.
Oh, then I would like that. Okay.
Glenn would like it, too, because it mentions champions a lot. He was a big champions player.
Yeah, and I've seen many a dirty GM in champions.
Basically, it's by a guy called John Wick. He was the developer for AEG. He worked on Legend of the Five Rings and Seventh Sea. He was the lead designer on that. And the Neopets card game.
Oh, Neopets.
Yeah, he worked on, you know, this dramatic samurai role-playing game, and then he went to Neopets.
Yeah.
Does he still work on Legend of the Five Rings? I don't even know.
No, he doesn't. He owns his own company now called Wicked Dead Games. He's got a bunch of different games he puts out. Hmm. But it's learn the worst, most despicable, dastardly, and downright dishonest game mastery tricks, traps, and tactics that will make you, with a GM, your players love to hate. And it's got some really nasty stuff in it. I'm really enjoying reading it.
Ah, that explains your DM style, then.
Yes. And the worst one's called the Vince.
Hey, just because I try to kill my actual play podcast group every often I can doesn't mean, you know, I like it.
Yeah, we're pretty tenacious, though.
Yes, and if you'd like to have a question asked, then you can go to our website, saveordie.info. We have Ask the Dungeon Master, where we're starring Glenn and Crispy. You can pop onto the website, type in your question, and they will answer it back as soon as they can in any video format.
Oh, yes.
I went there and looked, and I'm like, somebody's been watching Role Models.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because of the question that Crispy got asked.
Yes.
So they asked Crispy what the whispering eye is. That was the funniest response I've ever seen, Crispy. You look like you were ready to cry or something.
Well, the email that was attached to that is kind of creepy. So, yeah.
Well, we all know Crispy has his own fan, stalker fan.
I have a stalker fan now, which is very strange.
Yes, we won't say that email address, but it involves Trask and Love, so.
Yeah.
And Trask is his character on the Actual Play podcast that I run.
Wasn't he the one who asked, what kind of dice do you have?
I believe. I got asked a bunch of questions recently. Thankfully,
when he starts asking for pictures of your dice bag.
Well, no, you gotta worry. Dice bag.
We don't know at this point if it's a woman or a man, so it could be a woman. Oh. You never know.
Yeah, true.
Well, that's at least a little hopeful.
Yes.
I'm still a bit creeped out. I mean,
aw, they could be listening now and all upset now too.
Well,
I don't know. They might be. They might. They've created whoever they are. They have created an emotion in you, even if it's creeped out. They have achieved something. Now they have to take their victories where they can get it.
And it's not so much, you know, the email name. It's the whispering eye question.
Why is that creepy?
Well, Vince, it means vagina.
Yes, I know that.
It does?
It does.
Oh. So why is that creepy?
I believe the quote is
my whole life without knowing that.
I believe the quote from the movie is, tell her you miss her whispering eye. He's like, whispering eye? He goes, it means vagina.
He's like, great.
I hope I can say that on the show. I hope there's no, like, FCC.
Next time we see you, you're going to end up in, like, being James Caan in Misery or something.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Caan! There's no actual rating on this show.
Okay.
This is an adults-only show, so really. I mean, if kids listen to it, they're listening at their own risk, so.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, please, they've all seen Role Models.
Yeah.
So, Julie, go ahead with the F-bombs. Yeah.
No, that's one thing I don't want.
No, I'll try to restrain myself. Yeah, Glenn's the one who has to edit my blog.
But 99.9% of the stuff stays in there.
So,
Chris, edit as in,
what are the dates for NeonCon next year? Is it already up, or?
NeonCon next year is going to be November 3rd through 6th, and it's going to be held at the Tropicana, the historic Tropicana Hotel and Casino on the Las Vegas Strip.
Cool.
So it's like 3 blocks from my house, so I'm probably going to go all 3 days next year.
I'm going to try to attend to represent the Save or Die crew.
Heck yeah.
Hey, what you? Anyway.
Why me?
Well, one thing I've got, I'll be at RustyCon coming up in January. It's not a gaming convention, it's a sci-fi convention. And I was just filling out all my forms for that for this year. And unfortunately, at sci-fi conventions, I don't do a lot of gaming. I got burned out on that long ago because you go there, you set up a game, people sign up, and then they don't show up because they decided to get drunk.
Even if they pay for it? Oh, do you have to? I don't know. I know Gen Con.
Sci-fi conventions, it's all open gaming. It's never paid.
Oh, because yeah, Gen Con, you have to actually pay for your games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see, but at Gen Con, everybody's there to play.
Yeah.
At sci-fi conventions, everyone's there to get drunk.
Well, yeah. I was at Gen Con the Network last year, so.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's still game-related.
Yeah, true. All right, cool. Let's head into DM Fiat.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No, no, no.
So we got this week for DM Fiat, we have the big bad, as we like to call it, or the big bad evil guy.
DM?
No, the one in your campaign that... The NPC big bad. I call it the big bad because, you know, I'm a big Buffy fan, so...
The uber villain.
Yeah, and they always called it the big bad. It was funny how they acknowledged it as the big bad. They're like, who's the big bad this season?
the Vader.
The level boss.
Yeah, the level boss. So, when designing your campaigns... What, Julie?
What's the guy in Ravensloft? No, that's...
The Strahd. I'm trying to think of
something. Yeah, that... No. Anyway, sorry.
When you're designing your campaign, do you automatically make up a big bad, or are you just kind of go along with the flow and then make one up as you go along? I'm for designing a big bad right off, so the characters have something to look forward to kill. as much as Crispy has already encountered my big bad so far.
I hate that guy.
Telnok the Evil Drow.
Ah.
How would you handle it, Julie?
In making a campaign, I find that you at least have to have your outcome in mind. And if your outcome is to kill the big bad, then you do have to have at least a general idea of who or what the big bad is. Besides, everything that character represents has got to show up. You got to start having, you've got to start having them reflected. If you've got an evil drow, they're going to run into drows or rumors of drows. Mm-hmm. From early on, or else, it's like, oh, look, we're being attacked by pixies. Wait, there's a drow behind him? You got a genre. You got to keep it all in the general, the medium that villain would work in. And that makes it fun, though, because as they're trying to figure out who the big bad is, they give them a few clues. I'm a big clues over just random encounters kind of person. I love watching people's faces light up when they suddenly put it all together and go, oh!
Just like that, huh?
Usually, yeah.
And what about you, Glenn?
Well, I like to do it a little more organically. My main concern when I start a campaign is just to get the characters up and running into something. Now, if that involves making a big bad right off, okay, fine. But usually I end up making, maybe if I'm not using a module, a little big bad. Somebody who's... Because some of these guys, they may end up as big bads. But they have to have some kind of main antagonist at first. So I create a... say a high priest who is like maybe a couple of levels higher than they are or something like that, and let them go at it and see what happens. And then I start, gauging, okay, well, they're getting up a level. Let's ramp it up a notch. Let's make this guy. And then you eventually work up to the big bad who I haven't created yet. But then again, like I said, any of these guys could turn into a big bad depending on what the players do. So it's kind of like an organic thing. Like, when you start a campaign, you just make the town and maybe some wilderness around it, and then you just expand from that. It's the same thing with the big bad.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool, because also then you could have it be the, I am the supervillain because you did something horrible to
me. That's right.
And then it's entirely personal.
Yeah. I was the henchman you threw to the dragon. Well, I befriended the dragon, and he did this and that and the other thing, and now I got his hoard, and I'm rich, and I'm going to get you.
But you never thought you'd see me again.
That's
yeah, exactly.
Crispy, what about you?
It depends on the type of campaign I'm running. I don't do modules. I do everything homebrew.
Right.
It depends on the type of adventure and campaign. I've had one where there was a big bad. And they actually, they made the big bad. They turned him into a lich. Ooh. This was a powerful, hungry, evil king. And he wanted to overthrow the council that was trying to overthrow him. So he had them find an artifact to make him a lich. And so they had to go and rectify that. So that was an evil big bad, from the start. And then I had one where there wasn't a big bad, but over time they got one. And then in my next campaign, a crony of a former big bad that they've defeated is now going to be the big bad. Ooh. So what happened was it's going to be set 20 years from the last campaigns,
mm-hmm.
In the future. So now someone who they defeated but didn't kill has come back, and now he's seeking revenge.
You killed my brother. Prepare to die.
Hello, my name is Amigo Montoya. You killed my father. Now prepare to die.
So it's very much like Glenn had said. Sorry,
Jen.
It's very much like Glenn had said. I was thinking Julie, Glenn. They got mixed.
Wow, just became your own monster.
That would be horrible. Make sure the picture. Sorry.
It's like Glenn said. It's kind of a more natural, kind of organic process. And it just depends.
Nice thing about that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it just depends, because my next campaign is going to be very different from the campaigns I've run before, where they're actually, it's going to take place over the life of the adventurers, and not just be like, oh, we're adventuring for a period of 9 months or a year or whatever.
And then we settle down, yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I like the organic thing is because there's a point where you can go, okay, they got the big, you mean there's somebody bigger behind him?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can keep adding levels, and they keep getting up in levels, so you can keep adding levels of bad guys.
Or there could be multiple big bads, like, oh, we've defeated this evil, but I hear in the West there's an overlord who's doing this stuff.
Or the International Crime Syndicate.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So how about the big bad that keeps coming back? The one
that's what I'm doing with this next campaign, actually.
So the big bad, the whole group finally gets to, they beat it down, and then they think he's dead, but then he shows up again for another fight.
Oh yeah, that's
like most comics book series.
Yeah.
The Joker never dies.
Yeah. If you handle it right, it works, and if you don't, it just seems cheesy after a while.
Yeah, you got to make it somewhat plausible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if the magic's involved, you got to make it kind of believable within the context of the world.
I think it's something you should only do once a campaign. Like, don't have the same guy come back 5 or 6 times. It's dramatic if you do it once. Like, oh, I thought we killed him, but he survived.
Well, then
just establish that he's got a lot of siblings.
True. And also having the different levels of bad guys, like I was talking about, is that you can have a Moriarty, a mastermind. You never truly kill him, but you can defuse him by taking away his lieutenants, his dragons, his whatever. But he can always go to like another city or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And start up again.
And that brings up the point, is a good thing to keep your villain, your big bad, alive for a longer period is don't have him fight till the death. Have him run away.
Yeah. Or not have him fight directly.
There was a question raised at some point, and I'm sure it's come up many, many times, that at some convention I was at on a panel, somebody actually asked, what happens if your villain shows up to taunt the players in the first scene and somebody rolls an amazing roll? I mean, it's very much like in The Gamers when he keeps shooting them.
Yeah.
and what do you do if they kill your villain before he even gets off the ground? And,
well, here's what you do.
Well, I was going to get my answer, but go ahead.
No,
go ahead and get your answer first.
Julie, finish your thought.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, my simple answer was he vanishes because he's an illusion. Duh.
He's a Doombot.
He just projected himself to go, you know, you shoot, your arrow goes right through the illusion. Too bad. Good shot, but, you know.
Exactly. More or less what I was going to say is, what did you roll? Oh, 20? Roll again? Oh, okay, so that's actually a crit. Roll your damage. Oh, you did that much damage? Oh, it doesn't kill him. You hit him, and he sees that, you know, you're ready for him, so he runs off. Like, just don't let them kill him.
Yeah. I mean, the GM should never be a slave to the dice, no matter what, mm-hmm. if it is appropriate to the story.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of like bringing the big bad back, as I've done before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crispy hates the big bad in my game because he came back and then he had to defeat him all over again, and then he couldn't kill him. He had to arrest him, so...
Why don't you just challenge him to a game of Twister or something?
No, it's not the death from Bogus Journey. Yeah.
It's okay. My Hell Axe works now, so if I meet him in this forest...
What, you replace the batteries or what?
Yeah.
No, it's powered by evil and hell magics, so... When we're not around evil hell magics, it doesn't work right.
I have an evil Ever-Ready in my axe.
I don't want to know.
Anyway, anything else we could say about the big bad?
They're good to use.
It's really fun when you can start dialogues between the characters and the big bad in some way, where the big bad can be... You know, the more personality you can give the big bad, the more personal it becomes when they're fighting him. If he's, you know, just, you know, that helmet off in the distance, but if he's that guy who shows up in your dream and goes, you know, you would probably be better off if your teammate wasn't stabbing you in the back every 2 seconds. Yeah, no, he's always talking about you.
I had a lich once that I ran, who had the voice of Skeletor. So right off the bat, like, if you're doing a big bad like that, you gotta make them memorable, give them some kind of like quirk. So yeah, so he was taunting them, and they thought they were big damn heroes. So they came in and they're like, "Oh, we're going to stop you and restore, you know, goodness to the land." Blah blah blah. He's like, "Wow, really? You think so?" And
that was
so they came
Skeletor
and like he kept taunting them. He's like, "You can't withstand my magics. I'm far too powerful for you." And they're like, "Let's see." And he kept telling them to turn back, and they wouldn't. Finally, he just opened up with a fireball on them and almost killed every single one of them. Because they're like, "Man, we're tough enough to beat this guy." And he's like, "All right, I gave you fair warning." And then throughout that battle, he just, anytime he would down someone, he would make fun of them. If anyone died or fell unconscious, he would just make fun of the party.
In a modern day game, I had a creature like that who they caught him. He appeared to be somebody else. They caught him and frisked him, and he couldn't stop laughing because he's a undead creature that passes disease by touch.
Ah.
That's harsh.
Yes.
So if you have a more of a James Bondian type villain, the mastermind, say like Goldmember or anything, or even Dr. Evil from Austin Powers.
Oh yeah.
That likes to talk and torture his victims, you'd kind of like those better.
Yeah, I think so. I had a D20, like a modern game, like Julie said, we had a D20 modern game where we were forced to work for this guy, and he was just a bastard. And our main goal as a party was to get powerful enough to kill this guy, because we were just slaves to him. And I think that's a good point, is big bads that, you know, bastards you love to hate. Have you guys ever run anything like that?
Oh, I have one scenario. It's not a D&D scenario. It's a more modern thing. But I had a villain who, he subtly taunted them. I mean, he's like right there in front of them. And this was a game where they couldn't do anything in front of regular people. And he had a crowd of people around him. And so he did something that clearly gave them the clue that he knew what they were and what was going on. And they're like, And then they find out that he's not really the big bad. He's sheltering this creature that's the big bad. And he's doing it on purpose and letting people get killed. And he's collecting the money. And they just started to hate Noah. And so they go into the place to finally fight the big bad. And the answering machine comes on. And it's him. And he goes, "I know you're there. Why don't you pick up?" And they're like, "Goo!" And they pick up the phone. He's like, "I'll tell you how to kill it if you promise not to come after me."
Nice.
Oh, and that's awesome. Every time I ran this scenario, they just hated him so much. I would see people physically like cringe and go, no, I can't. I have to kill him.
Yeah, I think that's a better type of villain. Like, I as a player, I love having villains like that. And as a DM, I love when my players feel like that towards my villains.
There could also be big evil villains that are organizations.
Like the IRS?
Yeah, like the IRS, yeah. Power of tax.
like the teacuppers?
Yeah, I keep thinking of like the strangers in Dark City. I mean, there is no one big bad. It's like they're all big bads.
Mm-hmm. Though, now, one thing I've learned in writing in general is that if you can personify an organization in a character, you know, whether it's the head of the organization or just the one who happens to come out and talk to the players or whatever, then they've got a focus, you know, and they feel a sense of achievement when they overcome that entity, even if they can't get rid of the whole organization.
I did that one time in the campaign when I had my players wandered into this city, and it had giant walls onto it. Of course, you know, giant walls around a city screams, "Let's go investigate," for players.
Yeah.
So they wound up going to the city, and they wound up getting captured by the city, and they became slaves of the city. And what the city had were these special collars around the people's necks to control them, kind of like how they did in one of the old Star Trek episodes I happened to be watching the night before. And what these collars did was every time they disobeyed it, zapped them into submission. So they pretty much were working in the coal mines under the city. Well, they weren't coal mines. They made diamond mines under the city, and they had to keep working. And every time they tried to escape, the things would zap them or blip them back their house, which they had a little hut there that they had to live in. So
I remember this episode.
You do?
The guys with the big heads.
Yeah, I think that was that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and Kirk got the chick with the really big white hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had to fight her, didn't he? Yeah.
If that's the euphemism.
At first. At first.
That's right.
Yeah. I had this organization in one of my D&D games. It was a second edition called Blood Knights that I came up with. And their whole shtick was they became stronger through the blood of their enemies.
Ooh.
And the characters, it's like, yeah, we hate them. You know, they're working for these guys. And they got in a fight with the Blood Knight. And one of them killed an NPC, one of their NPCs. And he stuck his hand in the wound and smeared blood on his armor. And that immediately gave him like a +1 or something like that. The minute the characters saw this happen, they all turned into berserkers. Oh my God, we gotta kill them dead! You know, mm-hmm. Just stomp them into the. They were so freaked out over that. I said,
nice.
Up there, and this glow happens, and then he comes after you. It's like, oh my God, kill him, kill him, kill him. It's like, they all turned into berserkers. It was incredible. I'd never seen player characters do that before.
It's funny the things that will set off players. But that's the nice part is you have to really create an enmity in them for this guy. You can't have, oh, we're going to go after the big bad because he socialized healthcare for his nation. You know, I mean, you got to have something really creepy.
It's got to be more personal.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So big bad.
I can't wait to run my next campaign, the big bad, because they as players remember him and they hate him. And it's one of these guys like they're not even worth his time. Like they're so below him, he's never even spoken to them. They've just seen his acts of cruelty.
Nice.
And now he's actually like planning machinations and actually going out and doing evil things to people. So I'll be interested to see how they react to that.
Is he half pirate, half ninja?
No, he's a celestial assassin.
Is he the shadow?
No, he's like a.
Does he have a big shadow. Robot?
The shadow.
The shadow.
The shadow. The shadow.
All right, so we established the big bad could be a singular person, a multiple persons, or possibly an organization.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, a good call, Glenn. What do you think? 570-290-7283, the Save or Die specialist hotline where people are standing by to take your voice message.
Julie's standing by.
Julie's standing by to take your message.
I'm sitting by. I know it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Filing nails, waiting for the phone to ring.
Hello? Save or Die podcast. Can I help you?
Yeah. This is Peggy.
Peggy.
That commercial.
You gotta reboot your computer, dear.
All right. Save or Die podcast at gmail.com and listen to Random Encounters.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up must leave. Presto!
You will come out no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random Encounters.
Random Encounters this week.
Yes.
What do we have this time, Glenn? Get it right.
Med US Medusa.
No. I can't believe you thought that was Med USA when you said that.
I know. For sure, the show Med USA. What is it? We're doing a charitable organization. I was looking on the web for it. Med USA. Anyway, no. Medusas.
All about Medusa this week, a very powerful mythological creature from Clash of the Titans.
And others.
You remember that really bad CGI? Not CGI, claymation.
It was claymation.
Yeah, yes. Claymation.
Yeah, at the time it wasn't that bad.
Don't knock Harryhausen now. Come on.
All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was
pretty bad.
I didn't see the updated version of the movie, so I don't know how Medusa looked in that movie.
Right.
I don't think anybody saw the updated version.
It was only in theaters for like a week.
And it was in 3D.
That describes it, week.
All right, so how would you describe Medusa in your games? Crispy, if you were going to use Medusa, how would you use her?
In my games, mythological creatures like that are like the mythological creatures. There was only one to everyone's knowledge. So, you know, it's the Medusa. It's not Medusai. Mm-hmm. And I would pretty much just run it like the Clash of the Titans Medusa. I would not make her bipedal like it says in the books. I would make her have the like half snake body. And then, I don't know, like, it depends on what I'd be running. If I was running, Holmes, I would probably have it, be the, like, the focal point of an adventure. If I was running Menser, I don't know, it's weird. If you guys read Menser, there's a separate entry for, Medusas on the plane of Earth. And is this from something? There are a mass of, like, 10-foot-long tentacles attached to a ball with, like, multiple eye stalks. Is that, like...
Sounds like a beholder.
Yeah, sounds like a beholder.
No, yeah, it's like a beholder.
No, it's probably got something to do with, of all things... let me think on this. Go ahead. What makes me think of is, like, jellyfish, because there are jellyfish named after Medusa. I don't know why, but anyway.
So I was hoping you would know, because I know, Julie, you're like a huge like mythology nerd.
Oh, yeah. I figured when you get around to me, I'll talk about the mythology of Medusa.
Well, Medusa and Moldvay pretty much makes her look like a human female with snakes growing out of her
with
head.
With snakes on her head, yeah. And then she wears a cloak, and if you... I like that in you know, classic D&D, if you even look at the Medusa, like... Not in her eyes. If you just look at her, she turns one person to stone per round. Unless they save.
Yeah, or if they use them. The only way you can actually look at a Medusa is using a reflection surface, a reflective surface like a shield or a mirror or maybe, glass or something.
Yeah, because in later editions, they get a gaze attack, which is basically they look you in the eye and you go to stone.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've always used it as if she looks at you, boom, you know, or you look at her, boom.
I think in the mythology, it's in the eyes, isn't it?
It's you have to look at her directly or in the eyes. Yeah, that's why you can look at her in a mirror and that protects you.
I have to agree with Crispy. I would only keep it. I know the book Molve says like 1 to 3 or something.
Yeah, they travel in packs.
I would do Medusa as being the one mythological creature. There's only one, and there shouldn't be more than one. I mean, what happens if a Medusa looks at a Medusa?
They both turn to stone.
I mean,
they're facing each other.
They can't sit around and have tea together, obviously, because they probably, you know, turn each other to stone with teacups, but...
Yeah.
Maybe they turn to flesh. No,
they already are flesh. So, Glenn, what would you do? We'll leave Julie last because she has the mythology.
Yeah, and I'm going to try not to steal some of her thunder because I want to defer to her because, well, I'd probably use her as like, I'm not going to say there's just one, but she would be like the focal point big bad of the adventure.
Yeah.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Julie, weren't there originally like three sisters?
There's three, but there's debates on their origin. But yeah.
Okay, we'll get into that in your section. But I would use her as like the one big bad at the end, you know, with the mirrored shield and all that kind of stuff. I'm also influenced by a Hammer horror film called The Gorgon, which is all about the Medusa in modern times, and is this woman the Medusa or not, and all this other stuff. And it seemed to work the way I thought it should work. So I'd probably, you know, like I said, the big bad, there may be others around, but they're very, very, very rare. And she may be one of the last of her kind, that kind of thing.
OK, Can Medusa breed?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can still fight her if you're blind.
I mean, you just don't look her in the eye while you're, you know.
Yeah, let's not get into that.
Well, you open the door, you close it again.
Yeah, anyway, I'm just opening it enough to see if she can breed, doesn't have more of her kind. That's about it, Glenn. I wasn't going into Kama Sutra here or anything. Or...
I guess you could get a potato sack.
Oh, boy. She's a double bagger.
Are you calling her a butterface?
Medusa is a double bagger. You wear a bag yourself and a bag on her in case one of the bags fall off, right?
Since she's Greek mythology, she probably only uses trunks anyway. But,
Glenn, you're like too far away from your mic.
Believe me, you wanted me away from my mic for what I said.
All right, let's head over to Julie for her mythological descriptions.
Yes. Take it away.
Well, okay, now there's a couple different conflicting stories in Greek and Roman mythology about Medusa, which is part of the difficulty. Now, technically, now this is one of the things I always had a debate with in some various versions of Dungeons and Dragons, is Medusa is a Gorgon.
Mm-hmm.
The Gorgon is the kind of things they were. Medusa was her name. But they have Gorgons as something else entirely.
They're like an iron-plated cow.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I mean, even when I first read these things, the rule books of various sorts, I already knew the mythology, and I'm like, what? But, in the myths, either Medusa, Steno, and Urali were three sisters, and Medusa was the only one who could be killed. The other two were immortal. Think about that as a big bad.
Ooh.
Hmm. Yeah. There were three originally, and the others were the worse ones.
What?
Yeah. But in one of the myths, though, Poseidon seduced Medusa on the Temple of Athena. She was just a beautiful woman. And he seduced her, or was seduced. You know, never know who to blame in the mythology. In the temple of Athena, and Athena got ticked off, and so cursed her to be this way, so that no man could ever look on her again. And so it gives you a whole different take on it, though, if you're thinking, because then that's where you get the woman body, scary head kind of mythology.
So Medusa's pretty much misunderstood.
Well, you know, who could resist Poseidon?
I guess so.
That beard is lovely.
Well, he was no Zeus, but you know. Zeus could turn himself into a swan and still get some.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. Let's go away from that. But but another thing that they never talk about that is a big part of the mythology of Medusa, that I think is just as interesting as fighting her, is that when she was dead, Perseus put her head in a bag, and as he was leaving, he's flying away with it or something, and drips of her blood fell across the countryside, and monsters grew from them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome, because then it's the player's fault.
Yeah.
That's not actually in the D&D books, but that'd be something cool to incorporate into the book.
Yeah, it really would.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in Clash of the Titans, didn't it form like giant scorpions or something? The blood did something, or...?
It's been a long time since I saw it. I may defend Harryhausen, but I still don't particularly like the movie. I did actually do an episode of my show, 19 Nocturne Boulevard, that has Medusa in it. This is one of those things where I love incorporating classical mythology monsters into modern day stories, but this is a hard one because you sit there and go, well, yeah, did you notice this woman with snakes with her hair walking down the street?
Well, she wears a cloak.
Yeah. Well, and also I figure, you know, if you're old enough or you're magic enough, you got some skills.
Hmm.
I have to say one more thing, which is there's a movie, terrible movie called Terror Vision, which has a horror host in it called Medusa. And she's got, you know, the head of snakes. I mean, it's, you know, like stuffed, you know, wig thing. And she's doing her horror host thing, and she goes, yeah, yesterday I went and got my hair ratted. took 20 rats.
Yeah. Sounds like a really bad, was it Vampira, whatever it was?
Elvira, yeah. It was totally meant to be an Elvira ripoff.
Yeah.
I like the
but
other.
It's a great line, and I used it when I did my Medusa costume.
I like the other horror host back from the earlier days, Vampira. I like her better than Elvira.
Yeah.
That's a cat fight many people would pay to see.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
My question is, if Medusa was a normal woman, her sisters, how did they come into being? Do you know anything about that? Because I would like to use her sisters in a game.
They're conflicting myths, is what they are, and there was a lot of conflicting myths all throughout. I mean, if you go read a book of myths and none of the myths overlap or conflict with each other, then you know somebody rewrote them. But yeah, if you either have her being somebody who is seduced, or you have the three sisters, they don't really work together. But I like the name Stheno. I used it for a creature. I put people up against a Medusa many years ago and used Stheno instead, because everybody knew quote unquote Medusa, but they weren't expecting Stheno.
And what
because
did,
nobody expects no.
And what did she have that was different?
Well, this was a very different kind of game, but she was the big bad, mm-hmm. and it was more of a modern game where she was sort of running an organization. And because nobody says that these are mindless creatures, and that's one thing you talk about it being the big bad, and everybody portrays it as living in a cave and just like eating whoever shows up or turning them to stone and then being pissed because they're crunchy. But a lot of these mythological creatures, you know, you kind of assume if they've got anything like human form that they might at least have some intelligence. Wow. And then you wonder what the heck they're thinking.
Well, Medusa's an intelligent creature. I think in the book, Lister is intelligent.
Intelligence 9 in Menser.
Yeah, so why wouldn't she, you know, be clever enough to order out?
Yeah, true.
Come and rescue me. I'm trapped in this tower.
You're my only hope.
Yeah.
Pepperoni pizza. Oh, good. I don't have to tip him. He's turned to stone.
Yeah. Just kick him down the stairwell.
So that's when you tip him over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way they did it in the Percy Jackson movies. She seemed very intelligent and very in control.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, now I'm thinking about like statting out like her sisters to try and use one. I would probably make them a little bit tougher. Maybe a few more hit dice and
do all three of them have the turn to stone shtick, or is it just her and the other sisters have different
They were all the same. They all had the snakes for hair and the power to turn anyone who looked at them to stone.
Okay.
But according to Wikipedia, that's a later myth than the other myths, but, you know. And, you know, who knows?
Right.
But there's one further thing, which is the head, of course, when taken back, was mounted on a shield and was supposed to strike terror. Even dead would strike terror into the hearts of anyone who looked at it. So, you know, you face your enemies, you got this head on your shield, apart from being very heavy and sticky, and probably fairly smelly, you know, at least it had some function. But that's why so many of the shields have a Medusa head painted or engraved on them.
Right.
Is the intention is to hearken back to that power.
That's pretty interesting.
Well, maybe you can give the other sisters a different ability than turn to stone if you want to rewrite it your way. Maybe she maybe she causes fear to everybody that looks at her and they have to run away for so many rounds or something. Or
I was thinking they would catch on fire if they gazed at one.
Yeah, well, that's
you look at her and you spontaneously combust.
Turn into beef jerky or something. I don't know.
You mean they turn into George Hamilton?
Oh!
No, no, then they're undead.
I'm sorry, George Hamilton now stopped listening to the podcast if he was.
We're sorry, George.
I love George Hamilton, but he is a suntan zombie.
Yeah, I kind of... There's this woman at work I call the George Hamilton woman because she looks just like him with the skin discoloration and everything. And every time I refer to her, I go, you know, the George Hamilton woman. Everyone knows exactly who I'm talking about.
No, she's not going to listen to the podcast.
I don't think she's listening to the podcast, trust me. She's like 60-something and... And a crusty old woman, so...
So, but yeah, I like to look at things sometimes from the opposite viewpoint. I go, what would I do if I was Medusa? And I'll be like, you know, that would pretty much suck. You'd be bored to tears because you'd never... she'd be loving the internet. Because, you know, you could chat with people and they never have to look at you.
But what if it's something like, you know, with a video thing? Would Medusa's gaze go...
Medusa on chat roulette.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Did you see that?
It turns into chat Russian roulette.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah.
Stone, penis.
Nice.
Oh, gosh. That would be just... and then. If it lasts more than 4 hours.
Please contact your doctor, yes. Anyway, Medusa. But, you know,
there's lots of possibilities for something like that. Not that way, but I mean, using the internet and that idea, it's like... But, you know, also there's all sorts of ways of pixelating your face. If she wanted to be selective, she could use an icon or something. Or just not turn her camera on.
Like David Fox? Could I see a real picture of you?
No. Back to the real Medusa in the classic Dungeons & Dragons line, not the D20 modern or whatever Medusa, which is pretty much a lawyer in the book if you look at it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Which is weird. Yeah, they have Medusa as a law, an attorney, yeah, in the courtroom, not turning anybody to stone, may I add, but...
They made this safe.
Yeah. Repeatedly.
Well, a common way that Medusa is represented in modern type stuff is that it's only if you look in her eyes that mm-hmm. you have this issue. So she can wear, like, smoked glasses and then selectively decide who to actually meet eyes with.
Yeah, I think that's how I usually see it in, like, things with modern Medusas.
Mm-hmm.
God, imagine a whole city of Medusas.
That would be terrifying.
And there would be severe penalties for stoning people.
Ooh, and on that note, we're going to move into products of your imagination.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier, and we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons & Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
All right, so products of your imagination. We have a classic oldie movie we're going to talk about. And
here it comes.
It's probably one of the worst made-for-TV movies in the world.
Duck your head.
It is starring the Academy Award, Oscar Award-winning Tom Hanks, called Mazes and Monsters. Quick, run and hide. Three of us on this podcast were alive and playing during the craze of this movie being made. And one person, Crispy... is a later player. I just want to hear his thoughts first on this movie, since he really wasn't around he wasn't around during the whole scare that we went through as kids.
It's ridiculous. This movie. How can anyone buy into this? I feel bad for you guys living in the 80s and having to go through this, because I guess the propaganda and the kind of sensationalist attitude towards this at the time is the only reason I could ever see anyone believing that D&D kills people. And one other thing I really love is anyone who's ever played an edition of D&D, whether it be Brown Book, Holmes, Second Edition, whatever, none of the stuff they say makes sense. Oh, you've reached 9th level. Don't you just love creating your own scenarios?
Well, they could, obviously they couldn't use Dungeons & Dragons in the movie, so...
Yeah. I mean, it's not a, it's a terrible movie, but it's not like the worst movie ever. I could see it actually if it wasn't designed for sensationalist, you know, purposes. I could see it actually being an okay gaming movie about these, this group and their adventures. If you just kind of,
so a basic plot of the movie for those who have never seen the movie, which
like me.
Yeah, like Glenn, which I'm really surprised Glenn didn't see this movie. But basically,
I read the book.
That's the scary part. It's a, it was a book first.
Yeah.
And didn't Mike read the book as well?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Yeah.
Is that why he's not here?
Yeah. Now he had some other things to do this week. So
he drew this, the long card, yeah.
So basically, this guy goes off to college after supposedly being banned from playing this game because he was a screwed up individual, pretty much. Finds a group of kids that are playing the game. He doesn't want to play. Then they convince him to play it, and he starts becoming obsessed with the game as far as playing it all the time. And then they start bringing it to a new level, as in they find these caves. I forget where it actually takes place. Was it D.C.?
It's in New York. It's in upstate New York.
Upstate New York? Okay. They do find these caves, and they start making their own, like LARPing, sort of, in these caves. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Tom Hanks' character starts going pretty much insane because he's, I think he has a multiple personality disorder problem going on. And supposedly that they blame that on the game bringing it out for him. But, yeah, that was one of the major scares back then. So then he starts going into the caves by himself and starts thinking he's his character now. And he starts running around and eventually he just becomes his full-blown own character in the movie. And I think at one point he wants to jump off the highest building in New York City or something.
He wants to jump off the the Twin Towers.
Yes. I forgot the reason exactly, but because I think he said he could fly or something.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have enough points. I am the maze controller.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I just watched it last night. yeah, I'm going to just expand on what Vince was saying. Basically, the movie is not about the dangers of D&D. It decries the dangers of LARPing. the real bad stuff didn't happen until people started, you know, LARPing. And it just goes to prove that LARPers are weird.
Wow. Crispy just got himself another hater.
If we're real lucky, we could lump the furry fandom in there, too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're playing like a satyr or something, I guess that might... Or an awakened werebear.
From what I saw, I saw a couple of guys in rubber suits in there.
There was a furry at NeonCon. I didn't talk to him, but I saw him around.
Anyway.
Before or after he was stoned.
Yikes.
Now, he played games.
So go ahead.
First off, my first statement on this, and this is something that... I believe it's called the Five Percenters. It's one of those things where it happens to motorcycle gangs. It happens to Rocky Horror people. It happens to sci-fi convention people. And gamers. But, you know, the thing is that there are all these lifestyles, and gaming is no exception, attract people who are already massively damaged they can fit in. So I will say up front, this is something I've had to defend all my life because of this game and other things I've been in, like sci-fi conventions and stuff, is it's like, no, we're not all freaks. The problem is the freaks come to play with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are people who would go crazy over Taxi Driver or something or Twinkies or whatever if they weren't going crazy over games.
Yeah.
The problem is they find an outlet and they're, you know, marginally accepted, and then they go nuts, and then it's our fault. Because there are always people who have, you know, been nuts over something, but it's not the fault of the activity. They were already severely flawed.
Yes, all the people had multiple personality disorders, or they had some type of mental issue going on in their life, or they were depressed. And the parents at the time... Yeah. Blame the game because the sheep or the goat or whatever they call it, scapegoat.
Scapegoat, yeah.
Well, and that's actually touched on in the movie. You have a JJ who's like a prodigy child who is actually like the basis for the real story. He was the 16-year-old sophomore in college who you know, didn't really have a social life. He had, like, romantic troubles, and he was going to kill himself in the caverns. I think he actually did. But in the movie, he doesn't. He decides to, you know, make a new version of Mazes and Monsters that is the next evolution of the game or something like that. But, God, I mean, Tom Hanks's character in the movie is, you know, his parents, his mother's an alcoholic, and they fight in front of each other all the time, and his brother ran away and is possibly dead, and he blames himself for that. So, I mean, they had these psychological problems to begin with. And I also, it's weird because in the movie they talk about they use the game as an outlet to work out their problems. But do you guys ever do that? No. I've never met anyone who, like, works out their problems in D&D.
I'm afraid to say I did once.
A lot of people do, not so much directly working out their problems, but D&D gives them an outlet where they can be powerful, because they're absolutely powerless in a home life like that. Right. And the idea that there is some part of your life where you have control, where you're the hero, is huge. That's a huge morale booster, if nothing else, because it's an outlet. It's like, okay, this isn't going to last forever. I will eventually kill the lich and get my own apartment.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a YouTube thing called Fear of Girls, which is just...
Oh, I hate that series.
You hate Fear of Girls? I love Fear of Girls. Oh, I think it's funny as hell.
They're such bad... Oh, my God.
I know, that's what's so... Like, I even enjoyed watching Mazes and Monsters. Love terrible things,
there's
though.
Too much, like, gay undertone going on in that whole series, especially when they get too close to each other, and they stop and stare, and they're like, and then they go back away, and things... It's just way too much.
I love
much.
The one where they invite all the girls to come game with them, and one of them betrays... Because there's two main characters. There's the DM and his main player, who plays like a barbarian.
All the time.
And so they get this girl who... They make her play a thief. And they make her... Like, they decide what her character is, and she backstabs the guy who's not the dungeon master. So the DM says, oh, no, it didn't work. He is alive. And he, you're dead now. This thing happens. So they stick up for each other in the camaraderie. I thought it was a sweet moment. I thought it was funny. But you can tell that these guys have, like, a real dependence on each other.
Yeah.
Way too much. So
bros before thieves.
Bros before hoes.
Exactly.
Glenn, your thoughts on the movie?
Well, from what I saw on YouTube, it was painful. The clips I saw, I kept waiting for Bill Bixby to show up. It was that kind of movie, you know, with the, like you said at the end, with the backpack and stuff. It's like, oh, there's Bruce Banner going through the film. Okay. Hanks wasn't bad, but it did seem like a money grab to me.
Well, you know, it was way early in his career. I mean, this was before Bosom Buddies.
That's why
wasn't
it was a money grab.
Yesterday I was talking to Vince about Bosom Buddies. I wonder if this was before or after Bosom Buddies.
Well before, yeah.
Well, that's what the IMDb is for. But, no, I mean, this was, you know, one of the first things he'd ever done, a first starring role. You take whatever you can get.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. And you look at it and go, wow, look, I could be famous for being crazy. Oh, good. I can be famous for being a transvestite.
True.
Yeah, but did you, Glenn?
It was right about the time that Bosom Buddies started, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask Glenn if he saw Hanks's Oscar-winning speech when he's in the phone booth.
Kid, I killed someone! I know I killed someone!
Yeah.
Classic.
Well, I remember when the whole panic was out, because it was in the mid-80s, early 80s, more mid-80s, right? I'm not sure. It was the whole 80s. It was a decade of annoyance, but I still remember that I was playing it, and I was like, just about 10, 11, 12 at the time, my mom sits me down, and she's just like, so I see you've been playing Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm like, yeah, it's really fun. And she's just like, well, I've talked to my cousin, my distant cousin, who's a priest, and he said that kids are killing themselves and committing suicide and killing other kids over this game. And most kids become depressed after their character becomes fifth level and they wind up dying. I was just like, what? He's like, yeah, after they become fifth level, people become attached to their character, and once it dies, they become so depressed that they want to kill themselves or lash out upon other kids. I'm like, no, Mom, don't worry. I make up so many characters on a daily basis that I'm not really involved in one character.
Character named Blackleaf?
Yeah.
You can't... You don't exist anymore, Vince. You're dead.
Yeah.
No!
That was kind of harsh, that Blackleaf thing, you know.
I know. It's your fault Blackleaf died, though.
I'm so glad one of the retro clones is named Dark Dungeons.
Yes. In Labyrinth Lord, one of the example characters is a cleric named Pardue. So I'm hoping that Proctor did that on purpose.
I'm sure he did.
Dan Proctor, the guy who writes Labyrinth Lord.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So tell me, I've had characters up to 8th level. When do I start getting initiated in the inner circle with the robes and stuff?
I don't know.
To do the real DM magic.
Yeah, the satanic magic.
See, nowadays they realize that that's the other kind of dungeon.
Ah. The one friend
that's
I
the
had...
the adult's only one.
This one guy I knew who was playing... He was trying to work out his problems through, of all things, champions. And nobody was buying it, and he finally left the group all broke up. I met him like 10 years later at somebody's house. He seemed a lot more with it, well-adjusted. I said, what happened? He said, well, I found S&M, and it really turned me around.
Wow. That's an anecdote.
Okay, well, whatever did it for you, man, you go. You know,
swords and monsters. No, I'm kidding.
I would like to also mention. Now, this is at the time that all this was going on back in the 80s. Oddly enough, another book came out the same year that Mazes and Monsters came out that was similar, and I read that one first.
Was that the search?
It's called Hobgoblin.
Oh, Hobgoblin! I don't remember that one.
It's a fictional book, and it was, but it was more in the big, thick black cover horror section.
Yes,
you know those books.
Yes,
and you know, I actually kind of liked that one, even though it did have some of the same issues. But it made it more clear that this guy was kind of nuts to start with, and it wasn't the game.
Right,
well, that's a problem.
So it was in Wikipedia it says, like the Jaffe book, this was published at the height of the Dungeons & Dragons popularity. The height? In 81? And soon after the intense media coverage of the Egbert Steam Tunnel incident, blah, 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 blah.
Which review?
Which is, yeah.
Book. Yeah. Well, I don't know, like, I didn't live through this. I kind of feel bad for you guys for having to deal with this. But now, when I look at it, not having this experience... Like, I look at the movie and I see that it does an okay point to kind of point out that Robbie was crazy to begin with. You know, he has nightmares and blames himself for his brother and, you know, the game is not dangerous. It's the people who are, it's like the 5%ers, like Julie was bringing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the problem is that people saw what they wanted to see in it and they wanted to see that it was the game's fault.
Yep.
And it was the same way with the book. The book wasn't blaming the game. It was just trying to explain the incident, sort of. The problem is it got blown up into this whole flagship thing for, burn the books. Now, mm-hmm. I also have many, even at the time, I didn't know him, but I knew him within a few years after this. I LARPed, with a gentleman who was very, very Christian.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, and he was what I think of as a good Christian. He was one of those people who did the Christian thing. If you wanted to talk about it, he would talk about it, but he would never make a big deal out of it. But he played a paladin. I mean, you know. And, you know, he would sit down and talk with people about stuff if they wanted to. And he said one day that the way he explains this to people, because people always come up to him and go, how can you do this? This is evil. And he's like, no. Haven't you ever played Cowboys and Indians as a child?
Yes.
Haven't you ever put on, you know, a towel and tried to jump off the couch?
Played war in the backyard?
Yeah, exactly. That's all this is. This is, we have rules so that everybody, we don't get into arguments that where you're going, you know, I killed you. No, you didn't. I did, you know. The rules are there for that. Exactly. And he made a point of kind of crusading among you know, these kind of people, to talk to them in a very calm and sane and Christian manner so that they could accept it.
Oh, like I've said,
hi, Cinnabar.
Wait. I know in one of the games that I played in briefly, my DM Mike was running it on Friday nights. There was a priest in the game as well, Father Brian, and he had no problem with D&D because he knows it's not stupid and evil. It's just a matter of the people that were messed up playing it. But I do remember when I was younger, I went camping with a couple of my friends that were big churchy people, and we pulled out, of all things, Marvel Heroes, Superheroes game, the original one, not the role-playing one, the one that you actually had to play Captain America or the Hulk.
Yeah.
It was a board game type thing. And as soon as we brought it out and started playing, the father who was running the whole thing, he came over and he took everything and he threw it inside the tent. He said, no, you're not playing that evil game on my camping trip.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, nowadays you just have all your DSLs and things.
They do have the Christian Gamers Guild out there.
Yes, I've seen that.
For some reason, I belong to it. I don't know why, but...
okay.
Anyway, I have a lot of respect for people who are, you know, set in their beliefs. I just, you know, it's just they have to do some research before they start pointing fingers.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us your review on the movie. Actually, no, let's do our normal dragon reviews. Starting with Crispy, how many, out of five dragons, how many would you give this movie?
I liked the movie, but I didn't like it. I'm gonna give it a solid even 3 out of 5 dragons.
Okay, 3 out of 5 for the Crisp Man. And Glenn, not seeing the whole entire movie, just the bits and talking about it, how would you rate it?
25 to the nth. how small can I go?
As a zero.
Because I was going to give it like 0.25 dragons. Let's just make it one.
One dragon from the Big Glen Man. And running over to Julie.
I don't know. I think I'd give it 2 because I, at the time even, despite the negative impact, it at least was sort of validating gaming by showing that it existed. Because nothing else out there was even acknowledging gaming existed. You know,
that might have been a good thing.
Yeah, well, even in the movie.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, when you're the only one, and I was the only one most of the time, you know, in my early gaming days, you know, I'm like making characters and stuff, but I got no one to play with. And all of a sudden you realize there are other people out there in the world who are doing it.
I actually noticed that in the movie. Like, these four kids were the only ones on the college campus who played.
Yeah.
Because when he sets up that flyer, he's just waiting, and it's like you guys really couldn't find a fourth player. You had to like stock the lunchroom.
Yeah. I'm actually going to how many did you rate it? You said 2?
Oh, I'm still gonna give it a 2. Yeah,
okay.
It's still crap.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it maybe a 1.5 the most, because it was bad acting. It was an annoyance movie, and I hated the fact that what it did to try to portray Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, I know that they at least showed, like Julie said, how that the main character Robbie was messed up beforehand. So
yeah,
it wasn't the game's fault.
It was feeding the fire. The fire was already there, and everybody wasn't even paying that much attention. Because
no,
you know, I mean, in calm and modern now, Chris got it all. He saw it all. You know, so why not? Why couldn't they? Well, because they were just looking for fire, fuel for the fire.
It was the whole panic.
It's sensationalist.
It was the game on top of the whole satanic panic at the time, so they tied the two together. And
they tried to make a few bucks off it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're actually very lucky they didn't make the movie out of Hobgoblin instead.
That's another reason why I gave it a 1, because a lot of it seemed to be like a cash grab, not only from Hanks, but from like everybody involved.
Oh, of course it was.
Including the author.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave it a 3 because I got a good laugh out of it. I think it's interesting to see.
In fact, wasn't it billed as, what was the name of the author?
Rona Jaffe.
Rona Jaffe. It was hers, Mazes and Monsters.
Yeah, well, she was a name.
Built like that.
Yeah, it was because she was a name, you know, and she was respected as an author and stuff. So it must be true.
Yeah, to me, that just, it's like those movies back, like, the Betsy and the Love Machine and stuff, where they put the author's name on there. It's a cash grab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So pretty much it's going to be in the two range for Dragons this week. Go mm-hmm. check the movie out. I don't know if you can rent it anywhere. I know you can. I think it was on Netflix for a while.
Oh, you can buy it. They have a new cover for it that uses like Tom Hanks from like 5-10 years ago, and it's just photoshopped on like a gray background with a castle.
Yeah,
like it's old Tom Hanks. It's like from
The Da Vinci Code. Oh,
yeah, more or less.
Oh, jeez. So go pick it up. I'm sure you could find it really cheap on Amazon or whatever. And tell us what you think about the movie. If you've seen it, write us Save or Die Podcast, or give us a call. 570-290-7283. The paper was hidden behind something, so I had to like find it. And give us a call. We'd like to hear from your voice. Julie likes to hear your voice, as we said the last time.
Julie likes to hear her voice.
Yes, Julie likes to hear her voice.
I don't hear any voice. You don't even know if I'm a Medusa.
The ones in her head.
That's true, Julie. We have no one has ever actually truly seen Julie, so she could be a Medusa.
Oh, yes, we have.
Oh, that's right. We have seen Julie.
We have seen it. And anyway, it wasn't the blue one you sent me.
SaveOrDie.info. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. SaveOrDie.info is the website, or you can go ask the Dungeon Master a question. Click on the link on the website. Ask Glenn or Crispy your question anonymously, or even leave your email, and they'll answer it back. Let's take our backpacks and our shirts, head down the lonely road of broken tears, and say goodbye, good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Save or Die audiences are the best audiences in the world. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Gracie. I love this song.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit Save or Die at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / Save or Die Podcast, or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.